Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com, the independent voice of UNC Sports, brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com, the go-to provider for all your Tar Heel gear.
Welcome to another edition of the Inside Carolina Podcast. I'm your host, Tommy Ashley. We are sponsored by Johnny T-Shirt and JohnnyT-Shirt.com. I've got Jason Staples and Buck Sanders. There is still hope for us. This is the day after podcast. First one in quite a while. Last one in quite a while. But as we always do, we're going to go to general thoughts on the ball game. Of course, Carolina spring game yesterday. Carolina won. Buck Sanders, your overall thoughts observing?
There's not a lot to take away, really, I don't think, from the spring game so much, because they were mixing and matching people so much. The ones were going against the twos offensively and defensively. So very hard to get a real feel for things in that scenario. If the one offense was going against the one defense, it would have been a little different. But overall, I think my overall thought was you're seeing the future of UNC football out there. A lot of those young guys are just make your eyes pop. Power Echols of Ra-Ra Dilworth. I mean, Mac Brown was talking about trying to find some depth in the inside linebacker positions going into spring. I think he's found that now.
Found it.
and you know, complementing that is, you know, the strength they have on the defensive line that makes those linebackers even more effective. I think Eugene Asante could be a first-team All-ACC linebacker this year. I think he'll have a monster season. He'll have better opportunities at that position because he's got such strength in front of him on that defensive line. So it's going to be very interesting. I know the running back situation is still in flux. I'm like Tommy. I think the wide receiver situation is going to work itself out. So I think that's maybe the basic takeaways, but I'd caution everybody not to read way too much into the spring game, except they came out of it without any injuries.
There's the number one thing, that you have a full spring and you don't suffer any major setbacks injury-wise, and especially on the spring game when they're going to the ground the first time. And before I forget, take a chance to rate us, review us, and subscribe or follow on your podcast app and on the YouTube channel. Of course, this one will be up on YouTube soon after we record. And of course, there's always those live shows on Tuesday nights with the On the Beat crew. Jason, you know, similar question that I asked Buck, and Buck hit on my thoughts there. Wide receivers, they'll be fine. In fact, when we have our big predictions, bold predictions at the end of the show, I'm going to have one for that position group. But what'd you see overall that caught your eye yesterday?
Well, they're going to be a whole lot better up front with a quickness in terms of defense. So I spent a lot of time watching the line of scrimmage, because that's really where the improvement needs to come this year. I mean, I'm with you guys in terms of the receivers. I mean, there's enough talent in the receiver room that, and you've got Sam Howell. So, I mean, that's going to take care of itself, especially once you get Choffrey and Bo. Bo Corrales back. Those two, I mean, Bo's going to make a big difference out there. And, you know, Choffrey's proven what he can do in terms of his speed and being able to change the game. So, I mean, they're going to be fine there. But I saw a couple of those young guys on the defensive line. They showed up as you would hope. I mean, Ritzy in particular, Javari Ritzy, he was a guy that I watched him on a few plays where it was like, oh, wow, he's going to be a problem quick. That guy is going to be a problem for teams quickly. and Silver as well. You could see a lot of the talent. Now, it was obvious that those guys still haven't made the transition from high school to college in terms of understanding the level of intensity that you need to play with, and the, you know, even things like pursuit. There are some times where I could see, you know, the ball goes to the other side of the defensive line or whatever, and I didn't see the kind of effort in pursuit that you expect from guys on a top tier defense in, you know, Power Five college football. I saw like, okay, they're still working the high school out of their system on some of this stuff. But there was a sequence in the, I don't think it was about the fourth drive or so, maybe fifth drive, where Ritzy had two or three plays in a row where it was like, I don't know that they had any defensive linemen on the roster that could do any of that last year. Mm-hmm. And it was like, and he did that against the starting offensive line.
So, I tell you who took a big step forward, Miles Murphy.
Yeah. Also, yes, definitely. And so
took a big step forward from last year, I thought. Just the way he played.
And Collins as well. I mean, there were probably five or six guys up front where it was like, well, that's better than anything they had at that spot last year. And just the ability to get through two or three a depth of two or three guys at a couple of those spots that they're going to have this year. Now, like I said, some of these guys are still working their way out of high school, so you can't expect greatness right away. But I do expect that you're going to see Ritzy be a problem by mid-year. He's going to be getting into the rotation and causing some problems for teams at that point. Silver could be late in the year. He could be next year. But you're looking at guys that by the time they're sophomores and juniors, I expect that they're the kinds of players on the defensive line that you've seen south of the border. You know, Pedro would be proud of some of these guys. So for those of you who know I-95, but yeah, that was one thing that stood out to me the most. And yeah, I agree in terms of the inside linebackers. I was really happy with what I saw there. Another thing that I did notice is I think they still lack some depth in the secondary. They need their ones to stay healthy in the secondary. You could see the difference between the ones and the twos. The ones looked really good, and they got a chance to be a really, really good secondary if those guys can stay healthy, but they can't afford a rash of injuries in the secondary. And they've got to be healthier than they were last year. So those were the things that stood out the most to me. I think they've got a really good chance to be what we all hoped they would be coming into this year, though.
Yeah, for me, watching the defensive line, and we've talked about it a ton, and I'll freely admit, I doubt we talked much about the offense in this other than the running backs and maybe the backup quarterback, but the defensive line, he mentioned Ritzy, Miles Murphy, and then you've got Vahasek, and you've got guys there. I was hoping to see Jaleel Taylor step up today, and he made a couple plays, but my goodness, you and I have followed this, and Jason has as well, for a long, long time, and it is amazing to me that the where the level of talent has gone since Mac walked in the door. I mean, the level of talent in that position alone is ridiculous compared to what it was 3 years ago. And I think for me, that is the wow factor watching this team. But your thoughts on that?
Absolutely, Tommy. You know, watching those guys on the defensive line several years ago, and actually very recently, you could look at the defensive line in the spring and if you asked yourself the question, which of these guys has the potential to get to the NFL, you're not using very many fingers to do that, you know? but you look at this defensive line, I mean, you can see five, six of those guys playing on Sundays, maybe, and that's just on the defensive line. And you know, one thing we didn't hear much about, even though there is some depth issues that Jason talked about, did you hear Tony Grimes' name called at all yesterday?
He did get cooked in 7-on-7.
7-on-7s.
And that's what I misquoted on the message board that somebody pointed out immediately. But other than in real game action, no.
No. And you're not going to hear his name a lot next year, probably. And if you do, that'll be a bad thing. But, you know, and I didn't hear Kyler McMichael's name called either. And Storm Duck sitting over there on the sidelines chilling out. You know, and the number of guys that were out, just amazing. But one thing I wanted to question I wanted to ask Jason and you, Tommy, past 2 years, and for good reason, I get that there are reasons, Jay Bateman didn't do a lot of substituting on the defensive line. Very little. Aaron Crawford and Jason Strobridge played like 95% of the snaps. And even last year, when they had Miles Murphy available, Clyde Pender available, now those guys missed the spring. They missed a lot of conditioning. So, and they're big guys. They need that. But they didn't get any run until towards the end of the season. And Jason and Tommy, I want to hear from you guys. Is this the year where we're going to see the starters on the defensive line get 35, 40 snaps instead of 65, 70 snaps? That's what I'd like to, that's what I'm going to be interested in looking at this fall.
By mid-year, I would say the answer to that question is going to be yes. Because, I mean, here's something interesting to look at. At different points in the running game, the two defensive line gave the one offensive line more trouble than the one defensive line gave the two offensive line.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
There were more holes for the second group at times. And you go, well, what? Why is that? I mean, why? But now, granted, again, not all of the ones were playing. I mean, you didn't have Tamon Fox out there. You didn't have, you know, so there were some guys that will add to that already. But when you're starting to see, like, okay, they can put those guys in and they're not just getting gashed up front, then you feel better as a defensive coordinator saying, I can stick that guy out there. Now, there were some mistakes and fits and things that did lead to some stuff later in the scrimmage. But again, I think by mid-year, you're going to be looking at a rotation where you're, like you said, you know, 35, 40 snaps will be what you're seeing guys like, you know, Tamari Fox and Vohasek and some of these other guys. Those guys are going to be getting their reps cut pretty significantly, and not because they're not good, not because they're not playing well, but because now they can stay fresh, which the thing that people forget is when you only play 40 snaps, yeah, you want to be out there and all that. But here's the thing. You can be a lot more disruptive in the 40 snaps that you're out there than you were in the 70 snaps that you're playing. Cause you know, when you're going to be playing 70 snaps, you have to play like you're playing 70 snaps. When you know you're going to play 40, you can go out there for the three or four snaps in a row that you're playing and absolutely kill yourself. And then you know you're going to get a second to not hurt the team. So I think you're going to see that by mid-year. There's still some development with a couple of the young guys, but just like, I mean, Buck, you were right bringing up Miles Murphy. You know, I saw some good things from Kamen Rucker in particular. I mean, there's some guys out there that were out there last year that showed progression that says, yeah, that guy's going to play, you know, close to equal reps already. And then you look at the Ritzy and Silver, you know, the newcomers, and those guys are going to be pushing on the door by mid-year also. So, I mean, it's going to be a real thing. pretty quickly.
Buck, that's the thing I mentioned, I think maybe on one of the On the Beat podcasts. It's the debate was always, is player A better at 75% than player B is at 100? And they always had to make that choice. Those days are over, I think, and especially like Jason says, once we get to mid-year. I mean, and I reference it all the time, the Clemson defensive line 2 years ago played half the number of snaps on the season than Carolina's defensive line players. And that's where this team is trending, at least I think so. And like you said, Jason, if you can go all out for four straight snaps, three straight snaps, and then get some rest, it's better than just sort of going through the motions for 30 of your 70 snaps. So, yeah. And then you turn in, and what the two guys I want to talk about, or four guys I want to talk about with you and Buck, I'll come back to you too, is I thought 7 and 8 were really good yesterday. But, man, 23 and 11, they're smaller than I thought they were. They look smaller, and they need to gain some weight. But Dilworth and Power Eccles, that's not a bad pair to be backing up 7 and 8 and 44 when he's out there.
You know, as small as Dilworth is, and he does have to get bigger, I think Power Eccles is about where Bateman would like to have him. I mean, the days of a 6'1", 250-pound linebacker are over. He's not looking for Dick Butkus out there, you know, those kinds of guys. He's looking for guys built about like Eugene Asante. Asante probably only weighs about 215, maybe, on, you know, if he's eating a heavy meal, maybe. But, you know, he's got speed, and he knows where to go. He's strong at, you know, when he gets there. Those kinds of things are what Bateman's looking for. And so I think Eccles is, I mean, he'll gain some weight and get a little bigger during his tenure. Almost all of them do, but he's not far off from where Bateman would want him to be. Now, Dilworth has got some room to grow, but the thing about Dilworth was, as small as he is, he lived in the backfield. I mean, he was getting into backfield like on a huge number of snaps. He might not always make the tackle, but he was back there. And if you only weigh, you know, 100 pounds and you can tackle somebody, I don't care, you know, get in the backfield and tackle somebody. You know, he's going to be such an interesting player to follow over these next several years in terms of his growth and development. And he's already a scary player. I mean, you saw that yesterday. So we'll see. But, you know, I thought even, and Tommy foretold this on IC Live yesterday, that Kadri Jackson flashed a little bit. Cedric Gray flashed a little bit. I mean, there's more than Power and Rah-Rah back there, but those guys are really exciting to watch. It's unbelievable in a lot of ways. And that's why I was talking about earlier, we're really seeing the future of this program. I think Gimel plays a lot. Asante, I already thought, you know, he's going to play a ton. Those guys are going to have time, which is what you want, isn't it? You want your young guys coming in that are loaded with talent to have the time to learn their position, learn all their reads, get a little bigger and stronger before they get thrown into fire. And they've got that luxury with linebackers and defensive line that they don't have to rush these guys. You know, they can take their time, make sure they get all the information they need to have, more conditioning, more nutrition, all those kinds of things. So, you know, it's an ideal situation in that front seven headed into 2021, Tommy.
And one of the other things, when you've got back linebackers like they have these young guys, Eccles and Rah-Rah are going to be really, really good players on special teams this year. the thing that you got to remember is that your backup defensive backs and linebackers, and to a lesser extent edge players, that's where you get a lot of your special teams players. And so if you don't have depth in those areas, you're not going to be as good on special teams. And so, but when you can go three deep on your inside linebackers with guys that can play, that are actually decent players, and certainly that have, you know, outstanding athleticism from the young guys, then all of a sudden your special teams take a big leap, just because those guys, first of all, they're super athletic. And then second of all, they're hungry, because when they get out there, they want to do something. They're not playing as much as they're used to, because they're stud players in high school and all that. And generally speaking, you don't rotate your linebackers a bunch. You just don't. And you know, because, I mean, it's sort of like rotating quarterback to some degree. You don't take those guys off the field a bunch, but those guys are going to be terrors on special teams. There's a few of these guys that are going to be really good special teams players, and that stood out. And, you know, hopefully, you know, you expect that this team's going to have some leads in the fourth quarter, and that's when those guys get a lot of those reps and prepare for next year. But yeah, you're right. You saw a lot of the future out there, especially with some of the guys that were held out, and that future looks really good. One thing I will say, Tommy, I'm going to head you off here. One thing I will say that I was disappointed in was I'm pretty disappointed in the overall conditioning of the right side of the offensive line. I felt like those guys they came in into this game, each of them needing to drop at least 10 pounds. And they're still sluggish, still slow. And the talent there is just unmistakable. You're talking about two guys that could play in the NFL without a question, but they ain't playing in the NFL in the condition they're in. And that needs to change. They need to have a good summer on the offensive line.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I was going to go there after the break. And so let's hold that thought for 1 second. And let's get it.
Teaser.
Yeah, definitely a teaser. Because I want to ask, is a perfect point about special teams. And Buck and I were nodding throughout that, is that this team now has options of putting studs on special teams, which certainly helps. And you covered you don't rotate the linebackers a lot. I mean, I still think Gimel plays 80% or more of the snaps, probably more. But when we talk about the secondary, and we've talked about this a lot, you've got Duck, McMichael, and Grimes at corner. So you've got corner locked up. The safety position, and I'll flip-flop it, and I'll start with you, Jason. Conley is a stud. I don't know if he's a true safety. Maybe he is. Explain to me why he is or why he's not. But when I look at a guy like Dilworth, and I know there's two separate skill sets, but he's similar sized and he is extremely fast. Then we haven't talked about Trey Morrison, Don Chapman, whoever else back there. So where does Carolina need to get stronger in the safety spot, and who are the guys that you saw yesterday and throughout the spring that can make that happen in the fall?
So one thing that I'll be interested in is how they deploy those three corners once Storm Duck gets back. Because I'm of the view, particularly in the secondary, when you got three guys that can cover like that, you typically want your best 11 on the field as much as you can. So you don't necessarily pull one of those corners off the field and have him standing next to you, you know, for 40 snaps. Because corners should be able to do it all day. So then you start to go, okay, which of the three corners do you bump inside for when you're doing default stuff? And I mean, that would be my thinking. Now, the hard part about this is psychologically, corners like to be corners. They like to be the guy outside. And when you ask a guy to bump in and suddenly he has safety next to his name, sometimes those guys get offended. And so you have to massage some feelings with these guys. So I'm curious to see how they handle that, because to me, you're probably best off with a situation where you've got those three corners on the field along with four, with I'm getting to be like my old coach where I can't remember names.
Trey Morrison.
Trey Morrison.
What's funny is I'll tell you that Matt Brown kept saying sack number 7 or sack number 8. And my youngest son was like, doesn't he know their names yet?
Hey, you know, he knows their names like when he sees their faces and they're right before him most of the time. But, you know, Coach Bowden used to do this with everybody. I mean, he'd be a scholarship guy that'd been there for 3 years and he'd be like, ah, how you doing, 83? You know, like, okay, well.
But so, back to your point.
Yeah. But, you know, Morrison, I think, is a guy you got to have out there. And then those three corners, really strongly consider maybe putting all three on the field at once. At least you want to be able to do it if you play against a team that demands it. And then at that point, if you've got four safeties on the field, then you have Conley as the fourth guy, no problem, right? Or if you have four defensive backs across, you pull one of the corners, you got Conley as the box safety, you know, bigger box safety. You have Morrison as the field safety, basically the guy that's going to be more coverage oriented. And then you've got the other two corners. But as soon as you go with that five defensive back package, which is they're going to be their default, I think that's where you might want to slide one of those other corners on the field. And now you've got, you know, the three corners, you've got Conley and you've got Morrison, and I think you're really in good shape in the secondary, because I still saw at times in this game they picked on Don Chapman at times with the slot guys and even in the running game a little bit. It's not like they don't have talent at some of those spots, but it's not. I'm not sure that those guys are in your best 11 necessarily. So, you know, Cameron Kelly is a guy that can play, but I think that other safety is one that's going to be an interesting one when they're in that nickel situation. Cause I think you're right that Conley is more of a box guy than he is a true safety. Now, when you're in a big personnel situation, you can have him as that, you know, kind of on the boundary side, you can protect him. He doesn't have to do as much in terms of, you know, real twitchy stuff as a boundary safety and can kind of be a box safety from that spot. But I think that other guy, it's really the fifth guy. They're going to have to make sure that they really identify the two or three guys that they're really comfortable with there. And they'll know more once Duck gets back. And they're playing with a full deck there, and they need to be prepared. Okay, what happens when we don't have a full deck? And, you know, let's say Morrison, knock on wood, you know, something happens there. What happens if one of the outside corners or something goes on? They're going to need to have somebody there. So I think figuring out the fifth defensive back, how they're going to set that up with a full deck, and then figuring out how they're going to shuffle things if one of those guys goes down, which DBs don't get hurt a bunch. And it's amazing that the last couple of years they've had that problem. But they need to be prepped for it. And I think they've got the players to do it. I mean, I think Chapman's a player. He's a guy that can be a good player. But they've got some guys that can be difference makers. And I'm going to be interested to see how they get all those guys on the field at different points, how they shuffle that.
Yeah, Buck, it's you know, we're sitting here talking about how do they get talent on the field when in years past it's been – how do they get talent, period? But how you see this defensive backfield shaking out? I mean, I think if there's some angst on the message boards, it's at that safety position. And like I said, I love Conley as a box safety, like Jason said, but I'm not sure if you've got a team that's going to sling it, if he's the guy. But your thoughts there, Buck, before we finally get to that offensive line talk, Jason wants to go down the road.
Before Buck does anything, I will say you don't put Ra-Ra Dilworth at safety. That's a no.
There it is.
He's fast enough to do it, but you're taking away what makes him special. He's a linebacker, and he's special. He's potentially special at linebacker. He'd be a safety. Okay. Look, you got a safety there. Yeah, that's great. But what makes him special is he can run like a safety at a linebacker. And now you're stripping away what separates him.
Noted. But
okay. Well, what I would say is, and I'm always one that is looking for new wrinkles in terms of X's and O's, what Bateman might do. And, you know, yesterday before I get to the secondary, he did mix and match three down linemen, two down linemen. He did different things more so than he did on the field last year. It was primarily two down linemen. But in the secondary, and again, this is my proclivity to get over my skis schematically, but Iowa State plays a defense that's what they're referring to these days as the air raid killer. And they use three safeties and three down linemen, three safeties, three linebackers, and two corners is essentially what they do. Now, they'll mix personnel in and give you different looks and so on and so forth. But when I first heard that Jacurius Conley was moving to safety and that Don Chapman was filling in at nickelback, well, there's your three safeties. So having three safeties, essentially three high safeties behind those linebackers, studying that, what little research I did on that Iowa State defense, it's very perplexing to quarterbacks because they don't get the hang of that right away. Because if you think about it, when guys are covering into secondary, it's a lot about man coverage and that sort of thing. But it's also where your help is. Where's your help? And these days, quarterbacks are looking for that midpoint between the receiver and the guys that are bracketing him. You may have one guy underneath and one guy over the top of him. So they're looking for that receiver to get in the midpoint of that. And it's harder to find that midpoint if you've got three safeties back there. They're just closer to the action. So I don't know if Bateman has been studying that Iowa State defense. I don't know if he's going to think about implementing some of that schematically.
I know.
But do you now?
Okay. I do. I can tell
okay,
you.
Go
I
for
can,
it.
I can tell you definitively that he arrived at UNC having studied that, having spent time with the Iowa State defensive coordinator and that defensive staff.
He was formerly at Army at some point. He was a graduate assistant at or some sort of coach at Army, not where while Bateman was there.
Right, but that is a coaching fraternity. Once you've coached there, you know, you're an Army guy. But he spent time with them, and I can tell you for a fact that Jay Bateman has a whole Iowa State, you could call it that. It's not really that in terms of, you know, what they're, you know, how they would refer to it, but it's a whole Iowa State section of his defensive playbook. They haven't been able to show it the last couple of years because they didn't have the personnel for it. They couldn't do it. Now
you need a three down lineman to do it.
Yeah, you need three down linemen, and you also have to have the depth in the secondary to be able to play five defensive backs comfortably. And I mean, with all the injuries they had, the bigger issue is actually in the secondary. They didn't have the bodies that they could trust back there, and so they're trying to cobble things together. But that's something that Bateman, you're going to see. You're absolutely going to see some of that package this year. But it's a full package in his defense, and we just haven't seen it because the personnel wasn't there. And they'll bring it out against the right looks, against the right team that, you know, shows certain things that gives problems to and all that. But, you know, it's not their whole it's not their whole system. They're not going to run that as their whole system, but you will see it. They do have it. And everything that John Heacock has, everything that John Heacock and Iowa State do, Jay Bateman has as a package in his defense. It's an option. It's available. It's just a matter of whether or not they can do it. So I can tell you
that's
definitively.
Yeah. That's interesting to me. I mean,
you saw some of it at Army.
Yeah. Having that sort of package because Iowa State has like four-star players on this entire team, you know, and I don't know how many of those are on the defensive side of the ball, but defensively they can go toe-to-toe with anybody, and it's all based on Heacock's scheme. Now those guys have been in it for a while and know it very well, but, you know, something like that, and when I heard that Chapman was moving to nickel and Conley was moving back to safety, that's a different look, just in terms of body composition and skill and all that sort of thing that we've seen in the past, where we might have had, you know, Trey Morrison as a nickel, or, you know, even when at different points where they had different guys back there in the secondary. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, if we see some of that Iowa State look coming up this fall.
Jay Bateman's like the neighbor you have. You've got a hammer, a couple screwdrivers, maybe some other stuff. And Bateman rolls up with the brand new nice toolbox with all the mess that you borrow. Bateman's got it all, and he'll be able to deploy it. That's one thing. Like we've discussed here, he's getting to the point where he can break out all the tools to use them on game day Saturdays. Let me take a second, talk about Johnny T-Shirt, johnnytshirt.com. They are sponsors of this podcast and certainly great friends of Inside Carolina. We need to support them. I was in there yesterday, got me a couple stickers, got a big cooler we use, and we load it up with stickers of where we've been and what we like. And so Johnny T-Shirt satisfied that goal. They also have all the gear you could ever imagine. Tons of jerseys out there. Every school, journalism school, every school at Carolina you can imagine, every team. Support them as we support them. They're great. They're friendly. Whether it's on Franklin Street or online, same customer service you always get. And 10% off your everyday order if you're an Inside Carolina Premium subscriber. Take another break. Let the national guys pay the bills. You're listening to The Day After, the Spring Game Podcast with Buck and Jason. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
All right, boys, we're back. Day After Podcast, InsideCarolina.com, Johnny T-Shirt, Jason Staples, and Buck Sanders. Jason, let's get back to the offensive line question. I thought the twos looked really good at times, but I want to talk about what you said earlier about this getting in shape, because somebody on the message boards asked, what's the most important thing that Carolina needs to do in the offseason to prepare for next year. Is that it in your mind?
Might be.
At least on offense.
On offense, yeah, I'd say that's it. I mean, the rest of stuff, the wide receiver situation is gonna sort itself out. And as you get these guys healthy again, you know, they're going to be fine. I mean, that's, you know, those guys will be fine. We've seen that Josh Downs is the truth. You're going to, you know, Emory Simmons is a guy that you can win with. Choffrey Brown, you know, those guys are going to be fine. And, you know, and obviously Corrales is going to bring a lot to the table there. You know what you're getting in Sam Howell. The running back situation is just a matter of finding the two guys that you can ride with and, you know, hoping that they stay healthy. And, you know, it's just a matter of like, does the talent manifest, right? Are those guys going to be able to handle that business? And you got enough of them that, you know, hopefully you get two out of them. So then what do you really need to do in the offseason? What really needs to be the difference? It needs to be that those offensive linemen take this offseason. This is a contract year for some of these guys, and they need to treat it as a contract year. You know, they need to watch their diet. they need to make sure that every macro, every calorie, every whatever is counted, and that they are really working their way through just getting a little bit quicker on, especially on that right side. But basically these huge offensive linemen that they have in terms of Tucker and McKeithen in particular, Azudu needs to get healthy, and he needs to also make sure that he doesn't put on any bad weight. Richards is, you know, I thought he took a step forward in terms of he looks a little heavier, but he needs to make sure that his body comp and everything is where it needs to be. And then, you know, as Anderson is healthy, then you got a five. You can go trot out there against anybody and you're fine. But if those guys don't take this offseason seriously, if they don't come in fighting shape, then that's going to be a really talented group of guys that underachieves. And, you know, I thought they underachieved a little bit last year. But I think you're looking at a significant underachievement this year. There's a much bigger gap between potential and what they would do if they don't come into the season in fighting shape. They need to have a really strong, you know, pre-fight preparation season this off season to be what this offense needs to be.
It's an interesting take with the way they've talked about. They've got 8, possibly 9 guys that can play, but I can certainly see it. And, you know, to Carolina's credit, they got a great nutrition staff and great strength and conditioning staff, of course. Kelsey Gomes on the nutrition side and Hess on the strength and conditioning. But, Buck, I'll let you either counter that or give me another area on the offense that maybe you need to see the most improvement from. I think we've settled. The wide receivers will be fine. I think we can debate the running back room. What saith you here?
I think Jason's on point with what he's talking about there. But one thing that really impressed me, and you've already alluded to it, Tommy, they've got some guys on that second team, offensive line, looked really good yesterday. Cade Baker. He's going to be a player. And I don't know what Jason would say of about Diego Pound's body comp. That's a big boy for no reason. He's just big. Yeah. And so, you know, they've got some guys, you know, on that second team offensive line that, you know, we've heard about William Barnes, and, you know, we know that Ed Montillis, who played with the ones yesterday, you know, is a player, a guy that can start for you and not hurt you. So that's kind of my take on the offensive line is they're building good, solid depth that can take over when some of these other guys matriculate. So other than that, I don't really have anything major. Again, I think that you know, they mixed and matched so much and so often yesterday that it's really tough to get a hard takeaway from watching the spring game. I thought that, we were talking about running backs. I think Caleb Hood has got a chance to be a guy that can help him.
He was the guy that popped.
To me, he did.
Yeah.
I mean, they talked a lot about Henderson, Josh Henderson.
Henderson had a good game, but in terms of potential for the fall, I'd be more likely to hang my hat over in Caleb Hood's corner. He's got some stuff to learn in terms of pass protection. He's got some things to learn in terms of just knowing the offense. And I think overall the running backs and, you know, the commentators watching it on ACCN, they alluded to this several times that the running backs show good patience in terms of following their blocks. So, that's something that is certainly going to help next year. The thing that scares you is, hello, darling. Good to see you. She disappeared again. the thing that scares you is no real long runs from the running backs. And this was a first team offensive line, minus Brian Anderson and Easy. But it was, the first team offense going against the second team defense. Michael Carter and Javonte would rip off 10-yard runs on the rig without even thinking about it. And they weren't getting that from those running backs yesterday. They weren't getting any long runs, no runs over, 10 yards and very few of those. The one thing that probably we need to talk about that is of vital interest to Tommy Ashley is the backup quarterback situation.
You've got Caleb Hood's jersey behind you. So I'll give you Caleb Hood, and I've got a 6 jersey up there, but I'm not sure. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm not a jersey man, so I'm sitting here with no jersey.
He's like, I got my own. Go ahead, Buck.
Greg Barnes, who has watched 4 scrimmages counting yesterday, he says that's the first time he's seen Drake May outplay Chris Well. And I don't think there's not much argument about that. I thought May had a better day than Chris Well did.
It's a little iffy because of some of the stuff going on around each one of them. I didn't think either one played that great. So to me, it was a coin flip yesterday.
Isn't it difficult to determine that though, given like Jason said, like we've talked about how they mixed and matched the lines and who they were going against and all that. I mean,
with what was going on
around them and what they were asking each guy to do, I'm willing to bet that the grades for those two guys would be surprising for a lot of people who watched it.
Well, I thought we ought to at least get that in and talk about it a little bit to give Tommy his fix for the spring game. And you could go on to your bold prediction. I've already heard it. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I've heard Tommy's bold prediction for 2021.
All right. Let me ask one more question about this running back room. And I thought it was interesting that Max said it in the postgame presser that they've got to get it narrowed down to 3 guys that can practice and get the reps. And Vip said it in his segment in Keenan afterwards is that it seems to be a different guy every day. Ty Chandler's going to be one of them without question. I think Caleb Hood's the guy. I think Caleb Hood is Javonte to Ty Chandler's Michael Carter. I just think I see that how that shakes out. But Josh Henderson, DJ Jones, and Elijah Green all are going to get plenty of opportunities. The question is, Jason, is do you have to get it down to 3 to be able to successfully to successfully practice and get reps? And that is going to be those difficult conversations I think Mac Brown talked about over the last couple of weeks after spring is what's your role and what is your role as a running back and even as backup quarterbacks or whatever. So what are the challenges in that running back room for you, Jason, to get this team ready? Because like you said earlier, if you've got 11 or six, you don't have one. Mac's going to get down to one or two. He's going to get down to 1A and 1B and then a two. So how does that process work, Jason?
I think we may have lost Jason.
We may have.
He's frozen. He's frozen.
And now we've got the prom picture or the senior picture.
Yeah.
He,
Sorry guys, there was something funky happening with my Zoom there for a second, but yeah, I think you do need to get down to three. And ideally, I mean, if you can find two that are the dudes, that's better. And the big issue is that it is as much as anything, it's pass protection and it's having a feel for making sure that guy is going to be in the right spot every time. And that takes reps. You have to be able to trust those guys. And I, you know, one of the perks of having EJ Manuel as one of the commentators yesterday is the guy played quarterback in the NFL. And when you've been a starting quarterback in the NFL, regardless of how good you were in the NFL, you had to understand protections. You have to understand where pressure is coming from. All those things. And there were a couple times where EJ called out like, oh yeah, that, you know, that pressure, that running back's got to peel back this way. And there were a few times where he didn't call it out and say that. And I'm going, pressure there's on the back. And that's one of the things that was a luxury about Carter and Williams the last couple of years is, you know, people want to talk about how they ran and for good reason, those guys ran like crazy, but they also were really good pass protectors. They were reliable. They were in the right spots over and over and over again. And neither one of them had a whole lot of regard for their physical safety when they did this stuff. So you've got to get it down to the two or three guys that you know you can trust not to get Sam Howell hurt. That's the first thing.
That hit that Javonte laid in Wake Forest, unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean,
he devastated that guy.
Same thing against Boston College.
Yeah. And to that point, yesterday, Criswell gets killed twice because the back didn't pick up the linebacker.
Yeah. So you got to figure out who, first and foremost, it's not even about who's going to run the best. It's who's going to be reliable in picking that guy up. And that, those running backs need to spend the whole offseason in the film room figuring out and repping on the field, figuring out, okay, you know, footwork to get to this blitz. Here's how this, you know, make sure that my eyes are in the right spot to understand where pressure is coming from. That's another thing they're going to have to really take care of. So you got to get it to the three. To me, yeah, you're going to have, I think you're right. And, you know, in terms of who the, you know, who the first guys are going to be, I am betting on Hood to kind of find his way into the discussion as long as he can figure out who to block. You know, I do think, you know, you're looking at Josh Henderson is probably the second guy right now. So, you've got 26, 23 and 4 as the three. If I was going off of yesterday, or I'm sorry, 19, the kid from Tennessee, I'm missing his
Chandler.
Yeah.
Chandler,
Henderson and Hood are the three guys that I would be, if I was a coaching staff, I would be hoping that those are the three guys I can get to.
And but, you know, Jason, another point is that in a lot of Phil Longo's concepts, he'll have like a corner, a snag and a shoot, swing pass out of the backfield. And those are kind of the three reads the quarterback makes like right now. And if you can't catch the ball out of the backfield, that takes away one of your reads. So, you know, pass protection and the ability to execute some of the concepts that Phil Longo has built into his offense, you know, he's not going to want to rip out half his playbook by putting somebody out there that doesn't have good hands, you know, in the backfield.
Yeah. And I do think the other thing that was mentioned earlier, Tommy, you mentioned these guys didn't see him bust off big runs, and you can see why. And we've talked about this before on, on this podcast, that the running back's job is to win the one-on-one with the unblocked guy. That's his job. Find the seam where you're supposed to be. So vision first to get to where you have the space where to make sure that, you know, to help the guys in front of you to make sure that everybody's blocked first and foremost. And then your job is to win the one-on-one. And what we saw this year, and really the last 2 years, is over and over again, Michael Carter and Javonte Williams, they won that one-on-one. Well, I mean, what would you say, 75% of the time this last year? If they were one-on-one, they won that matchup. And not only would they get an extra 5 yards, frequently when they had that one-on-one, you know, so the guys, they're one-on-one with the guy and it's like, okay, you can tack on 5 yards as as an expectation. But there were a lot of times this last year where it was one-on-one and they'd tack on, 17 or 45 after they got that one-on-one because they kept winning that matchup. And I think I saw the running backs in the spring scrimmage, they won the one-on-one maybe 5 times that I saw. That's why you're not getting long runs there, is you've got, and there are a couple plays that just stick out in my head where it's like, oh man, he's coming off. He's one-on-one with the safety here. If he makes that safety miss, or if he breaks that tackle, that's a touchdown. But that safety kept winning. I mean, that's the same thing we saw in the Orange Bowl, is the safety comes up and, you know, you got everybody blocked. You got a one-on-one head of steam, got a chance, make that guy. Oh. Yep. And you could see the backs a couple times, you know, clapping the football when they got up, like knowing that they had, you know, one guy, and who's going to be the guy that's going to be able to step in and make that guy miss and add yardage. So those two things, who can block and who can make the second level guy miss or break that tackle and get extra yardage. And you hope that those are the same guys.
Yeah, you nailed it on the Orange Bowl. And we mentioned it before. Those were touchdowns with the normal guys out there, but that's this bunch has got to figure it out. I think this is the bunch we'll be talking about the most. Buck, to your point, the backup quarterbacks, Drake May looked good. We'll see where that goes.
May's got to learn to set his feet.
Yeah, and he had a couple throws, especially when he rolled, that he kind of looked like Howell with the happy feet sometimes throwing the ball downfield. At least early in Howell's career. Let's talk about bold predictions before we get out of here on the Day After podcast. I'll go ahead and say mine. I'm going to set Josh Downs over under at 1250. I think he can go for 1500.
I might take the over on that 1250.
But what do you think? Because he's open every single time. And he was open a couple times that Howell, a couple dimes, but a couple balls that would have been touchdowns with better throws. What do you think on over under 1250 on Josh Downs?
I'm going under. There was one guy in college football last year that went over 1200 yards receiving, and that was Devontae Smith, won Heisman Trophy. So you're not talking about an easy thing to do. He had like something crazy like 1800 yards receiving, but the next best guy had about 1198 or whatever. There were a couple of those kinds of guys. I do think that Josh Downs obviously has a chance to go over 1,000 yards. I think Choffrey Brown's got a chance to go over 1,000 yards. If you could get both of those guys close to that number, and then you can get something like, 700 out of Bo Corrales. What are we talking about with the wide receiver room? That's not going to be an issue. So, I would say that 1250, taking over on that, for, you know, still a young guy, very talented guy, and probably the number one threat in the UNC offense, but it's going to be hard to get over.
I'm going with the over.
All right.
I'm going with the over. And the reason is last year,
I hear you,
there were fewer games.
They still play 12.
De'Ami Brown played 11 games last year and had 99 yards a game. So
13 games.
And I think they're going to play, you know, they're at least going to play 13, I think, right? So
maybe 14.
It's possible maybe that they play 15. 14. I don't think they'll play 15. I wouldn't bet on that, but 14 is definitely not out of the question. So I think with 13 games, De'Ami Brown gets to 1300, 1350. And I think
who was also a senior and very familiar with the offense and
sure,
all
sure,
that.
Sure, sure, yeah. Yeah. But I think you're going to see real close to, I mean, I think that's a really good spot where you could take the over or the under and feel pretty good about it. But if he stays healthy, I think he's going to go over 100 yards a game.
1,500 though, Tommy.
I think he could get there. I think he could get there. Okay, he's going to have at least two 225, 250 games.
1,500 is going to be tough. Here's the interesting thing is how many yards he has and how many touchdowns he has and all that is to some degree going to be contingent on how good the guys outside are.
Right.
And the sort of paradox of this is the better the guys outside are, the more yards you're going to see him have. Because otherwise, if teams feel like they can cover those guys on the outside more one-on-one, then they're going to bracket him as much as possible to try to take him away. And so he's going to have less success. If you get a couple of those outside guys that start to gash teams and start to hurt him, then he's just going to run wild because teams aren't going to be able to double him. They're not going to be able to bracket him. And if that's the case, then you're looking at, you know, some silly games.
I think Howell's going to throw for more simply because I don't think the running back's going to be near as good.
Yeah, they're going to be throwing more.
So, Buck, give me one. I'll put you on the spot. Give me your bold prediction. You're muted, so you're canceled.
I think I've already given mine, which is I think Asante will be a first-team All-ACC linebacker. I think he'll make the first team.
All right, Jason, give us one.
So, how bold do I need to make this?
Look, I just said that a sophomore wide receiver is going to go for close to 1,500. That's pretty bold.
That's pretty bold. And Asante being all, you know, first team all ACC is pretty bold. Let's say, I don't know that I have one that I want to go on record in terms of like, this is a player prediction.
All right. So we can go off record and save it away from our listeners, but you're going to put it in an envelope and seal it.
Yeah. I mean,
break it out.
I do think Sam Howell's going to be in New York, but I don't think that's exactly a bold projection at this point. So I do think you're probably, you know, if they stay healthy, they probably have two defensive backs wind up in, you know, first three teams of all ACC. So, I mean, maybe that's something, but I think, you know, a lot of the superiors on this team are known. The questions are, you know, the young guys, on the defensive front and all that. So, you know, Ritzy is getting 35 snaps, 40 snaps a game by the three-quarter mark of the season. That'll be a prediction that I think I'm comfortable with. I think you're going to see him getting that kind of time by the end of the season.
I think that's pretty weak.
weak prediction.
Pretty weak.
Jason's weak prediction.
I'm fine with that.
What about this? What about this? One of the young defensive guys is in first or second year, make first or second ACC team. Is that possible?
Grimes might, but I think it's still, I think that's still probably a year away. But I don't think one of the really young guys that has not already played that's, I don't think that's realistic. By the way, I did think that EJ Manuel's comparison of Ra-Ra to Telvin Smith was spot on. You're talking about that kind of player at linebacker, and that's a guy that can.
How about this, Jason? 24 points a game over and under scoring defense.
That's another one of those numbers that are.
It's 29 last year.
29 last year. 29
and you said 24?
24.
I'll push it.
I'm going to go over. I'm going to go at 20. I would say about 25. And one of the reasons is I think that they're going to be throwing the football more. And so when you throw the football more, there's another possession or two in there. So they're going to be close to that much better defensively. But in terms of the raw output in scoring defense, it won't necessarily look on a per game basis that much better. On a per drive basis, I think that's around the level of improvement that you'll see. You know, it would be on exactly the same drives and schedule and everything as last year, like 22, 23 points a game, maybe with this year's defense. I think it's going to be that big of a difference. I mean, almost a touchdown different, but I think there's going to be other factors in play. And I'm also factoring in that they're probably going to make, you know, I'm not going to say probably, but they've got a real good shot of making the ACC championship, which is also probably going to be a higher scoring game, which would probably tip that just a bit up. So look at their schedule, and I'd say that's close to a push, but I'm going to go with the over.
Fun times, boys. Next time we talk, probably going to be our annual prediction podcast some point in mid to late August.
We should do something else during the summer, Tommy, for sure.
Well, yeah, I got it. I'll tease that, and then anything else is gravy. We'll definitely get together. I think Max said he's coming back in a couple weeks to meet with the media again to discuss some things and to break down the off season. So we'll probably get back together then. But anyway, that's going to do it for this edition of the Day After Podcast, Carolina Spring Game Edition. Johnny T-shirt sponsored, Buck Sanders as always, Jason Staples as always, and I'm just the guy trying to keep these dudes in line. I'll be your host, Tommy Ashley, for as long as they'll let me.
As long as there's a backup quarterback, Tommy's going to be here.
Oh, next year is going to be just unbelievable for me after Sam moves on. Anyway, as always, guys, appreciate it.
Thanks, Tommy.
Thanks, Tommy.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com. Brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Where to go for your next Tar Heel gear purchase.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.